Welcome to the ITSB Magazine Podcast Network. You're listening to a new episode of Off the Record, a student abroad podcast, where your host, Saman Fatima, will cover the lengths of what it means to be a student and faculty. Saman and her guests will explore how, why, and what students, especially international students, face when they move abroad to complete their undergrad, master's, or PhD. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hi everyone, this is Saman Fatima and you are hearing Off the Record with Saman on ITSB Magazine. I'm really glad that I get this chance to actually host a podcast on ITSB Magazine, and why not just to represent the student community here, because as a student now, I have seen the lens of how do you actually deal up with a lot of things at international places. So with that, I just start up with my first episode of Off the Record, and we have an amazing guest. But before introducing and knowing more about what my guest brings up on the table, I really wanted to wish everyone Happy Women's History Month. I know International Women's Day is around the corner, and what not a better way to actually represent a woman who has done a lot when she arrived here with her college life and with her career. So you will hear a lot about her, her job details, how she has actually acquired that student life, how she actually dealt with a lot of things from visa to coming here to even, you know, picking up a lot of local delicacies here in the States. So let's welcome my very sweet guest that I've known for years now. So hi, Harini. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really, really glad that you agreed to be part of it. And it's really great to actually know your story and your roads, how you actually came here for your college. So really glad.
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Saman, for having me on your podcast. And thanks so much to ITSB Magazine for giving us this platform. Saman was one of the first few folks who I knew when I was stepping into cybersecurity. And she's always been a role model and someone who I get very inspired by. So super happy to be on the podcast today, and wishing everyone a very happy Women's History Month as well.
It's my pleasure, really. I'm really glad, actually, I'm starting up with you as my guest. So let's just begin. Let the world know, actually, how have you actually come here, what you have done here, what you are doing right now, and everything. But before going to that section, please, please introduce yourself to my audience. Let them know who you are and why you're here. Like, what college? When did you came here? And a small introduction about you.
Sure, happy to. So, hi everyone, I'm Harini, and I'm currently working as a product security engineer at Salesforce. I came here to the US about a year ago to do my master's at Carnegie Mellon University. So I recently graduated with a Master of Science in Electrical and Computer Engineering, and I did a concentration in cybersecurity. It's been a wild 1 year here in the US. It's still a really wild time going on here, but very grateful for all the experiences.
So, okay. I just wanted to know, like, let my audience as well know, like, what part of India do you come from?
Yeah, sure. So I come from Chennai. It's in the southern part of India, a really heart scorching place.
I've been there, and yeah, I really agree to that point with my first employer. I went for my training, and yeah, it was hard, but yeah, with a lot of culture shift and everything, it was different, but yeah, the weather was the major demon there.
Yes, for sure. It's a beautiful city with its beaches, but the heat really does get to you, so can be quite rough.
Okay, so you have been part of the technology space since your undergrad as well. So what was the shift that you made here in your graduate program? So what did you pursue in your undergrad, and then what made you pursue that degree from Carnegie Mellon? So if you could know more about the length of the degree, what did you do and why did you choose it?
Yeah, for sure. So the friends, my high school, I was really interested in programming. Like I had a programming class in school, and that was one of my favorite courses. So I knew I wanted to pursue computer engineering. So that's what I did for my bachelor's. I did a Bachelor of Technology in Computer Engineering. And during my first or second year of university, when I was looking around at what kind of domains are there for me to explore, cybersecurity really caught my eye because for me, it seemed very interesting on looking beyond building just a product, right? So your responsibility doesn't end with building something, but how can you make sure it's secure? So I wanted to know more about it. And hence, most of my learning in cybersecurity was, just by myself through the internet, because there were not really much courses available in my college. So that's why I really wanted to do a strong academic program in cybersecurity. So hence, after my bachelor's, I worked for a bit, but master's in cybersecurity was something I always wanted to do. So that's why, decided to go for the graduate program here.
That's great. We really resonate on that one point of, passionate about cybersecurity. And that's why, I am also sitting in the same boat as a student, because cybersecurity, right, I guess, has that magic. Because with time, you have realized that you are building something, but how are you actually securing it? Is something really, really interesting. And that is part of professional life, and then the student life, you get to know the lens of it. So that's like a bang on point. I guess every cyber person would be admin to this one. So when we talk about the courses and everything, as you mentioned that you were really passionate about cybersecurity, but why that university? You would have gone through zillions and zillions of universities and colleges, and I guess just not United States, maybe other countries as well you would have explored if that's the option as well. So why does, Carnegie Mellon, that college stood out for you? What was that point like? I know there would be a lot of folks looking out for CMU and its courses, and why in particular the university is chosen by a lot of students. So if you could know more about that, your perspective.
No, for sure. There are no dearth of great universities. I guess I think the US and in other places as well, there are really amazing universities with top-notch professors. What stood out to me from Carnegie Mellon University was the first thing was, the research culture. So when I was looking up online on what kind of labs are there in cybersecurity, what kind of work they're doing, that was really impressive because they had strong ties with industry as well. So, I had that sense that, they were working on real world problems, and there are a lot of professors working on different aspects of cybersecurity, right? Like be it network security or even on the human side of things, like usable security, and a lot of interesting research going on. So I felt I had a bunch of options or tracks I could pursue in CMU. And I think another major factor was the academic rigor as well. The courses at Carnegie Mellon are really known for their strong academic focus, with a special focus on foundational things, which, as a cybersecurity professional, I thought that was something I considered necessary to have a really good foundation on computer systems or software to build my career in. So, and the student culture as well, they have a top competitive student hacking team. So I felt that atmosphere was also very conducive for me to pursue a cybersecurity journey.
That's really amazing. With that research point, I guess that's the sold point. In minutes, I guess you're sold on that point, that what all things the university offers. And when we talk about US and the university, and especially when we talk about Carnegie Mellon, it's really, really at a level that you see folks coming down there and they have a different set of mindset when they come there. And, when you come to the college, you be part of the culture, the student fraternity, the professors and everything. How that particular atmosphere you felt change, as compared to your undergrad, the education to what you have taken up back in your home country to what you actually perceived here. What was your take on that?
Yeah, for sure. I think in undergrad, right, you know, the set of people we are around, you know, everyone is kind of going at the same path, you know, same courses as you. And as a, in a bachelor's program, probably no one has worked in the industry before. So you're all kind of in the same boat. But I think when you come to like graduate school, you have people not only from various countries, which is a given, but also with various backgrounds, right? You have people with, you know, extensive industry experience also taking the courses along with you. So the kind of questions they ask in class or the kind of conversations that they would have, right, is really very interesting to, you know, see a different perspective. So I think those were really influential for me. Though, you know, I must admit that, you know, one, I spent a year in my graduate class and that's really not enough. It just goes by so fast. So even though I would have loved to interact more and more with the student community or the professors, you know, it's very limited time. So I try to do the best I can with talking to professors and the students around.
I understand that when you just have 3 or 4 semesters and that's a year long course, like I am also part of an year long course,
right,
like that's 3 semesters, 3 seasons, that's it. At times of exams, you think like, I just wanted to get done with it.
Right.
I just wanted to get my degree and walk out. But once that time gets near, you really feel that, you know, that thing on your heart that, okay, now we're actually stepping out of the university. The major thing now stands in front of us, our career, to build it again. And, you know, for people like you mentioned, like who have been part of the industry for a lot many years and then they come and pursue their masters, they really bring up a lot on the table. And there's a, you know, situation for, you know, being, you know, being inspired by them as well, but on the other hand, having that imposter syndrome as well, that, you know, you just blame yourself for, you know, being too quick in the course and maybe you would have spent some time in your career. So was there any sort of such transition shifts, anything in your behavior that you noticed as part of the course at any point of time, and what really brought you back to the move that, no, I can do it, it's me?
Right. No, for sure. I think the transition phase, right, like the first semester especially was really hard for me, because, you know, you already have like a very tight academic curriculum and you also have other responsibilities, like, you know, searching for an internship, maybe, you know, doing those applications, doing those interviews, taking up courses. You know, you obviously take up courses to learn something new. So that's a lot of like that's a huge learning curve for you to, you know, pick up on. And like you said, the imposter syndrome as well, right? Like I was part of some courses which I, like reverse engineering, which I've never done before. And there were folks on the class who were super good at it. Something which would take me hours to solve, maybe would take an hour for that, just 1 hour or 45 minutes for that person, right? So then, you know, it's very easy to get intimidated, you know, but I think what helped me was, and I tried to see, you know, what techniques they were using, try to come out of my shell and learn from others. But still, you know, the first semester was really pretty rough. And it was, yeah, like I said, it was super packed. And like, I could not wait for the semester to end. I was literally like counting dates on my calendar. And at the end of it, you know, to be honest, I was not feeling that happy. You know, it, when you look out from the outside, it looks very rosy, right? It's a great university you're going to. It's a great program. But at the end of the first semester, I was not feeling happy. I felt like I didn't really belong in the university. And with things being so fast-paced as well, it's really difficult to get a grasp or like just a hold of things. You know, what's going on, what has happened, or even take a moment to appreciate what you have accomplished. So that was pretty hard. And I think I realized that as much as my academics was important, it was also very important for me to have a good social circle, to be feeling as part of a community, right? I think that's what I was missing on. And hence, I took that as a major focus for my remaining semester at CMU, so that I end up feeling happy about the program I did.
Obviously, like, you've really, really come stronger, and I'm really proud of you. And it's just like these small moments that we just keep it to ourselves, and it never comes out. It's just the degree pictures that goes out on the gram, and it's more of that we've come here for an outing or for a vacay. But people really miss this point of a lot of students who come international for their further studies, and they, you know, really think that it's like a bed of roses, but it's really not. And I just wanted to go back to your point where we were talking about the courses and everything. So I just missed out for my audience to get to know the course that you actually picked up, Masters in Cybersecurity. So what was the process? Like, what process did you follow to fill up your applications and everything? What all things are needed by the university that you submitted? And how was that process, if you could just explain that to the audience?
Yeah, for sure. So I actually did a Master of Science in the Electrical and Computer Engineering program. So the requirements may have changed now, but at the time when I was applying, you know, you needed to have a GRE, take up the GRE and the TOEFL exam, and you know, submit that to the university. You also had to write a statement of purpose, which is basically an essay talking about why you want to do that program and why that university attracts you, right? What could you get from the university and what would you contribute to that university as well? So you had to submit that essay. And of course, your undergraduate transcripts, letter of recommendations from your ideally professors you have worked with during your undergrad who can really vouch for you, your skills, you know, in that field, you know, and why they think you could be a fit for the program in the university. So these can take a while. I would say the whole process is at least a year and a half to apply, you know, to get do these exams, you know, get the scores till submitting the final application. So yeah, it's a year and a half long process, I would say, to apply. And yeah, in that sense, there was no interviews as such. I've heard that some programs have interviews, but there was nothing like that for this program. So it was all submitting these online.
Cool. So anybody who wanted to go to CMU, you know now what are the things you want to get set with, because it's never too late to actually start applying. Check out for the seasons that they're taking the intake, and you're good to go with your scores and the other essays that they demand. With my college, they had like a video essay sort of thing as well. So it's like depends from university to university how they actually take up things. But I know things change, but yeah, it's better to actually memorize what is on the website for the university, and that's the best to know about it. So when we talk about, you mentioned that your first semester was pretty heavy, pretty overwhelming, and I understand with, you know, a long travel and you coming down, settling to a new state with nobody you know, and more of things just piling up on you with unpacking, with getting your bank accounts open, with knowing actually the area where you stay and where you can get your groceries from. These are like very, very important things that you search for those local things near your place that should, like, would I be able to see those packs of, you know, chips or other things that I really rely on? So how was that for you, Harini?
For sure. Even till today, whenever I walk into an Indian store, I'm the happiest. I'm literally like a kid left in a mall. And mind you, I was completely not like this when I was back in India. So my family still makes fun of me and how much I've changed. But it can be really challenging, right? Because often you don't know people beforehand in the city you're going to live in when you come here as an international student. So getting that network of people that you can rely on and, you know, get information from as well, like where to go for groceries or how do you set up a bank account. So that was pretty challenging. But I think my the roommates which I had and the friends, like I had you know, people I spoke to before coming to the program were really helpful in that regard. I think a major challenge to like pick out was moving into the flat itself, because I was the I traveled alone, and you know, was the first person to check out the flat which we had leased, and it was completely not in the state which I would have liked or expected. It was in a much different state, let me just put it that way. You know, the carpets or the furniture, it was just thrown around. So I was super shocked, especially after a long, long journey of three flights and finally just crashing on the bed and you see things are not in place. So that was really stressful. But yeah, that's why my like advice to anyone who's like going abroad is, you know, make sure the place which you pick to live is safe, it's secure, and the management, if you're taking like an apartment, right, like the management is responsive. So in my case, thankfully, the management was very helpful, and they, you know, tried to fix the issues within a few days of me moving. So yeah, that was a roller coaster, right? But you know, things to keep in mind, especially I think safety, and making sure that the landlord or the management is friendly and can fix issues soon.
I understand that, because when you're sitting like miles away in a different country and booking your house and, you know, getting your roommates or flatmates for that matter, and you don't know them and you don't know the place, it's just you've seen it over a Zoom call and then, you know, signing right. up the lease and everything happens, the paperwork. There's really a big, big difference of how you see things through technology and now when you come actually here. So things really change, and when you actually come down from a 24-hour flight, it's really, really different.
Correct.
And I know things look really fancy, but they need, you know, a work as well with a lot of things. So I really Correct. Resonate with that fact. With my current apartment, I was the last one to actually come. I was the luckiest one. I got everything sorted.
Lucky one then.
I just had to get sorted. So, you know, and that's the thing, like everyone has their own set of experiences with things. Like, you know, there are instances where you haven't actually played a part in those things, like, you know, small, small household items. And here it's like A to Z, you have to do it. So
Correct.
With that homesickness, that jet lag thing, there are a lot of things in front of you. So
right.
When you were, you know, very new here and you had to do a lot of things, like, you know, get a bank account open, submit any of the documents in the university, or maybe get something for, you know, like if not cooking, but you have to order something. So were there any instances where, you know, you faced few things, and how actually things work out if, you know, if there was any college aid or anything that the alumni could help up with the future students, something of that sort?
Right. I would say, like, definitely, you know, like the alumni network, if they are there in the city, they can be really helpful. In my case, yeah, like you said, right, like from the time you arrive here, there are like a zillion things you need to do. And I guess it's not just for a student, or, you know, even when you start working or doing something else, there are always major responsibilities on you, right? There's nobody going to be running behind you saying you need to get this done, you need to get that done. It's your responsibility to make sure that you submit applications on time, or, you know, you fill out things on time, you fill them correctly, right? So that was, I think, yeah, for me, just trying to adjust to the weather, first of all, because I came in peak winter, and doing these things was quite challenging. For cooking as well, I did not know cooking before. So my family was a good support for me. Being on video calls with me when it's probably midnight for them and trying to help me bake something. But I had, like I said, I had good roommates. So, you know, and all of us were kind of on the same boat. You know, we had never really stayed out of home for such a long time and being left out all by ourselves. So that was super helpful for me, because, like, I think being with good roommates is really important to have a good peace of mind, because you're already in a very stressful environment. And the least thing you want for yourself is to have a stressful environment at home. So I would say pay more attention to the people you are with, going to be with, the circle you choose for yourself. For me, that really helped. So we all learned cooking together, and that also reduced the homesickness by a bit, being with a good circle.
I know, right? That is something you don't decide. You don't take an interview and then get flatmates and roommates. It's just...
Though there are people who do that.
Who do interviews, right?
Yeah. So I did. I was also part of interviews. I said, to make sure that your priorities align. Let's say you are someone who sleeps early and you don't want to be with someone who's going to be up all night and probably making money. So, for CMU and some other universities as well, there's a huge spreadsheet of the criterias that you're looking for. It's literally like a matchmaking for roommates. So, and I would say that worked out in my favor. So, highly recommend it.
This is something really amazing. I would have done it at my time as well, but okay, cool. CMU folks, you'll get your perfect match as a roommate or flatmate if this is the stuff that's needed, because that's really important, because in a week you may have twice or thrice day you have to go to the university, but the major portion of your time you actually spend at home, and you actually, connect with your roommates or flatmates. And that's the best part, that they are actually your family at that time. And if that becomes really toxic, I don't know how things really function after that. So it's really important for you to have a healthy environment at home as well. And like you mentioned, having things together, cooking together and everything, that really helps you get out of that homesickness part and, be more okay with the situation and how things have been. And obviously that thought comes up every day, but you're here for the bigger picture of doing good for yourself. So that's amazing. That's a big time thing that I knew about CMU now.
But not just CMU, a lot of different universities. In fact, the student population at CMU is fairly low, but some other universities I've seen, it's a much longer list of interviews and selection process. So emphasis on creating a peaceful environment for yourself. This is something people might not think straight out of the box, in thinking about going abroad, but super important to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's, I guess, to an extent it's fair as well, but that's funny as well. Cool. So we have been keeping the elephant out of the room till now, and I wanted to say it aloud that this is one thing that major students, including me, they're really nervous and they really overthink about the situation, is the visa process. And, how actually you do all that paperwork, what are the things that goes behind it, and how actually on the D-Day, I know there are two D-Days. One is for your scanning portion and the other one is your interview. So what was your experience, considering yours was the first time and first time you got it stamped? So how did you deal up with all that anxieties and nervousness that, what if things go south and I'm not able to crack it?
Right. So, to everyone, please be prepared for my long speech coming about the visa process. Just kidding. I think this process is grueling enough for anybody going through it. I really want to talk about what you have to do before you get to the stage of visa process, because the interviews, of course, were stressful. I'll get to that. But planning your finances, I think I would say that 100 times, plan your finances and how you're going to show the proof of your funds much in advance. Especially if you're going for an educational loan, which I did, and if you're approaching government institutions, or using a property to get your loan, please know that It will take a lot of time. I was promised that the whole process would be done in a month. It took twice as much, and I was really in a spot. So that, Heidi, I cannot stress on it enough. I think it's literally the first thing I tell to anybody who's asking me about doing studies abroad. So as soon as you start getting admits, I would say start thinking about this. You don't really have to make that final decision of which university you'll go to. Like, I understand, like, some students right now are waiting it out to see what more admits they'll get. But you don't have to wait to plan your finances, you know, till you make that decision. You can always make a gross estimate of how much funds you would need for your tuition, for your living expenses, and start planning out those documents. Because that's I guess the longest process. So yeah, that was grueling, and I had to run around a lot. So you may have to be prepared, just as an FYI, to run around a lot with a lot of documents. And I was working at that time as well, so it was double as stressful. For the visa interview, I would say, yeah, we all get scared no matter who tells you how many times not to get stressed. It's just inevitable. I remember I was not able to sleep for days till visa interview. I was thinking, and as someone who always thinks about like a plan B, you know, my mind was just working on different decision trees on based on this outcome, you know. So I get it. It can be really stressful, but I would say there are these helpful like Telegram groups or even like a university admit groups where people share experiences about what questions were asked to them or what they were like, what documents they had to show. So that can be really like stress relieving, because you can kind of see a pattern of the questions being asked to students. So you can be prepared with what you have to answer. So always like remember, like be crisp on your interview, on your answers, just be to the point. And I would say they are there to help you go to the US or to any other country. I don't think these are meant to be as a rejection spot. It's rather to enable you to do your studies. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind, I guess. But yeah, I agree that it can be a really grueling process. Before the admits and applications is a long deal, this is an even longer deal.
I know. Like when you actually prep up on your university materials, like a year back to when you have to join, and when you get the offer letter, that's just not the full stop. There's more after
the real story starts.
Yeah, like once you receive that offer letter, it's just a minute of happiness, and then you have loads and loads of documents, paperwork, and everything to get sorted. And financially, a lot of things are on stake. And with the time draining and a lot of things on stake, I know there comes really points where you actually think that why am I going there? Why am I putting across all these resources on stake and I'm leaving the country? So it's really important, like that's my pro tip. And I guess Harini, you would agree as well that, you know, you have to be very comfortable in yourself, in your decision that you want to do this, or else it just would be really, really bad here, that you would be really sulking all the time here and things would really go south. So that's one thing. And the visa process, how much, whatever lens people tell you about it, they share their feedbacks, they tell you the same like counter number, it still is a nightmare. I've been in contact with zillion people, but still the time I was there, it wasn't a good time. I guess it was the same for you as well, that you feel it like, what if?
Right, because you just don't want to screw up something and, you know, jeopardize your chances, right? So I definitely didn't sleep the entire night before the visa interview, and till I got the final signal that I've made it, I was just on my toes, I think.
For me, I was like, the time he said it's approved, I just ran off. Before he could change his decision, I ran off. Like, I don't want to hear anything else. I just picked my documents, ran off. Like, I just wanted to hear that for this day, and that's done. It's okay.
Right. Right.
So it's
No, I
like,
think you highlighted something, like, sorry to cut you off, but like you highlighted something really important, like to remind yourself of why you're doing this, right? I think it's so easy to lose sight of that when you are in the weeds of all these processes. So yeah, like I think even when it comes to choosing the university, like applying to universities, different universities, like I would say, you know, to apply to those which you would really want to go. If you had an admit, I see people who kind of do panic applying of, you know, what if I don't get an admit? I really want to do my master's. So they end up applying to a whole lot of programs, which, you know, they may not be really interested in a couple of them. So it becomes a hard decision for them later on to move ahead with that, right? So I would say, you know, keep that in mind. Don't have to panic apply. You know, choose a good set of universities which you really are passionate about.
Yeah, I guess that's like you have to take a lot of time for your research to happen, for you to know. It's not like you DM anybody and know about it. It's more of how you research about yourself. Like, I created a PowerPoint presentation depicting slides of like this is the college.
I want to see it later after this.
Like, it is situated in this city, this state, the weather is this, you know. So as to, you know, there are a lot of points you have to consider, that, you know, how much you can take up financially, physically, emotionally. There's a lot of things you put on stake and come here. It's not like a thing that you leave your home country and come. It's just not.
It's definitely a big deal, right? To
yeah.
Such a huge
and,
move.
Correct. And it just goes without saying, like, we're really proud of ourselves, what we've done. We are. But yeah, stepping out of that comfort space is also very important for you to actually see different lifestyle, different set of growth opportunities for yourself, what the other country actually offers. And coming here 6 months down here, it's really amazing for me. So I do not regret my decision. I'm proud of myself, and I'm really proud of yourself as well. And you should be as well, and each one of you who is listening to us. I know a lot of the points would seem familiar with what you have gone through, but yeah, it is what it is. Like, it should be known to a lot of people that it's okay that there are good days, and it's okay that there are days that you're sad, you're crying. It's okay. Life is a mixture of both the days. So that's something really is the worst side of coming abroad. But let's talk about the other part that I guess you have come across is when you completed your grad and you were out in the market, you know, searching for jobs and everything. And we know that this is the time where a lot many people have actually lost their jobs, and it was really, really bad. For a moment, it was really sad for me to open LinkedIn and actually see those posts and no such help that we could offer across to people. But how were things for you, Harini? Like, emotionally, and you know, with a lot of things going on in your head, because we know on visa how much time frame we get to get that job or everything. So I know there's a pressure situation, but how was it for you? How was your experience?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I think I was just towards the end of wrapping up my like internship when, you know, like one by one these hiring freezes started. You know, you initially you would see a few companies announcing hiring freezes, and as the time goes on, it's literally like every company. Yeah, like since I was graduating in December, you know, which was not far away, it was only a couple of months for me to graduate, so the pressure was definitely intense to find a job, you know, interview. So for, I think, balancing your academic like requirements, like commitment, with the whole like application process and interview process was that was a huge stressor, because while applying, you know that, you know, but there are so many hiring freezes all around, and you also see on LinkedIn, you know, it can be really depressing, and you start losing hope on whether you would be able to get a job. So I was also, you know, first like talking to my like the immigration, like the the Office of International Education, as it was called in CMU, about what are the timelines for me, right? As someone on F1, how much time do I have after I graduate to find a job? How many unemployment days are given on OPT? Since I have to apply for work authorization, right? Like, what are those timelines so that I mentally had a picture on how I should be moving forward on the visa and immigration side of things. While applying as well, initially I got into this rabbit hole of I would, you know, open my laptop with the idea that I'll apply to 5 companies, but get into this whole rabbit hole of clicking different applications, doing this panic applying, and I would easily spend hours and hours on it. And then later realized that I had no time left to do my courses. So it was really difficult to get out of that panic applying mode. In that instance, actually, the career counseling like service, which was there at university, so they were super helpful. So like I reached out to them just to get some tips on how I can go about applying while balancing. And they really had some good tips, right? Like, something simple as, you know, make sure you time block things. You know, if you think you could spend an hour or two today, stick to that time limit. Check off maybe 5 or 10 applications and then proceed. Only that way it's sustainable to do this alongside your courses. So yeah, for me, thankfully, I was lucky enough to get an offer about a month or so before I could graduate. But even after signing on something, there's always this panic of what if, right? What if something happens to it? Should I be applying for more jobs? So it's still a very crazy time to be at. I really, really hope it gets better with time. And your alumni network can be like the biggest strength for you at this time. I reached out to a bunch of people who are graduated from CMU, reached out for referrals, people in the community, and they were incredibly helpful. And I don't think I could have done it without their support. And just sometimes words of motivation can do a lot for you at those times. So yeah, really grateful for the people around and really hope this situation gets better.
I understand that situation because I'm going through the same, and it's really stressful, I guess. And I don't know, like, I hope things get better for me and for people who have lost their jobs or they are searching for jobs, get it as soon as possible, because there were in total a lot of hurdles, like, you know, first hiring freeze, then yeah, layoffs, and then, you know, things are opening now, but it's pretty much slow. So, you know,
correct,
things are catching up. But, you know, when you have a hard deadline that you have to get this job by this date or something of that sort, that's the pressure point where it triggers. And I can understand that, you know, the seniors, the alumni network, your folks, really, and the communities that you're actually being part of, they really help you, you know, with all those things. Or maybe a pack of fries that could really cheer you up. So there are a lot of things, but I think so. Things would get better because I see things are getting better, but I hope things do not take a U-turn and get back to the same, because I have been through a lot of situations where my friends have lost their jobs, and it's really tough. And when I say it's really tough, is that we are on visas and things have to be, you know, good.
You have like a clock running, right?
Yes.
That's the stress.
So that's the stress point there. And you don't want to go back when that's the situation of actually, you know, you want to have a career here and you're liking it here. And then there's a clock on your head.
Correct.
So I know, like, I'm really sorry for that time that you had and all those stressing moments and everything, but I'm really happy with your current job, and you're with Salesforce, and that's really, really amazing. And you want to talk more, like, in short, not giving out much of the details, but yeah, something about the role and, you know, how are the things that you're liking it, and yes, more about Seattle, like, how are you really liking the PST time zone?
Yeah, the only complaint I have with the PST time zone is it makes it really difficult to connect with family in India, because when you wake up, they're already like, good night, I'm too sleepy. Right? So making time to talk to people in other time zones is especially harder in PST. I was in EST during the graduate program. But yeah, at Salesforce, it's been almost 2 months since I'm here. And I must say, like, you know, the culture and the people are really nice and really friendly. And with regards to my team as well, they have been really helpful to help me ramp up on things, because this is such a large organization with so many acquisitions and so many products, and the tech stack is just so varied. So to get a grip on those things are a little challenging, but, you know, with a supportive team and manager, you know, it's been good. So my role, the main responsibilities, I would say, are, you know, as new features or new architectural changes are proposed, you know, I and my team have to carry out security reviews. So that means talking to developers on what they have in mind on building out like a new feature and identifying security risks, going back to them on those and kind of striking that compromise and balance of, you know, what kind of risk can we accept, because you want to enable developers to do their job. You don't want to put barriers to everything they're trying to do. So figuring out that balance and communicating effectively is a core part of the job, I think.
It's not, I guess, with the DEI part, but breaking barriers is everywhere.
Yeah.
With the tech jobs as well. So that's really amazing. And big, big congratulations for you. I know you're amazing at your job and you will be like a great asset to your team. And I hope great, great days at Salesforce, and you enjoy the time zone. I know it comes with a challenge, but yeah, it is what it is. Like, you cannot just have everything. So that's really amazing. And I just talk about like every bit of it, and when I really want you to go back in time and give me two like honest examples of your student life where things you thought would work like it would be a cakewalk for you, but it wasn't, and the thing you thought would be a cakewalk or like would not be a cakewalk was very easy for you. So like one positive side of the student life and one negative side of the student life that you wanted to give it out to my audience.
Yeah, for sure. I think cakewalks are very rare to find. So, you know, I really have to think hard to see if anything really was a cakewalk. So that's the difficult part to answer. If you ask me about the things which are not a cakewalk, I have a huge list. But I think rather than cakewalk, let me put it this way. The things which are really nice about the university or just the experience of, you know, being a graduate student, which I didn't expect, is the resources available in the university. Like, you have, at least at CMU, we had an academic counselor who you could talk to on, you know, what courses you have planned for the semester. Is it too heavy, too light for you? Like the course load, you know, is it enough for you to learn what you wanted to learn? And also, you always have multiple things on parallelly running, right? Like job search, for example, takes up a huge chunk of your time. So they are really helpful in helping you estimate how much of load it would be. And also, like I mentioned previously, the career counseling services also were super helpful in how to, you know, telling how you can draft your resume, what are some common mistakes, what are some things to keep in mind during an interview process, how you could prepare for it. So these resources, I thought was really nice and helpful. But again, I think just life in abroad is that people don't come to you. You have to go reach out to people to get the, you know, to get the help you need. So all these resources which I mentioned, right, it's your responsibility, or I would say it's on you to go reach out. If you reach out, they'll be happy to help, but you know, it's on you to take that first step. So that's something, I guess, was just having resources available was really nice. What was not a cakewalk I mean, the course load is one thing which I knew beforehand. So I had the opportunity to do a couple of two CMU courses remotely before I came, and I got a great sense of the load it could be. So I think many students were really caught by really shocked by how busy it can get. But since I did those courses remotely, I was well prepared that I know it's going to be super busy. So yeah, expect grad life to be busy. Another thing which was strangely such an obstacle for me was I got a new laptop, which was the M1 Mac. And, you know, I didn't think much of it. Like, it's a great laptop. That's all I knew. And later I found out that some of the crucial software I needed for one of my courses would not run. The virtual machines would not run. And the entire semester was such a pain for me to just do my assignments. The assignments were hard enough. And, you know, not being able to do them on this laptop was such a pain. And
I've seen my friends go through the same pain. And I was like really happy that I have Windows.
Oh God.
I'm really happy I could do everything on it. And I really, really, really was happy with my decision that I did not change it. Like, I did not come here or bought a new one or, you know, bought it from India itself. But I was really happy that I continued with it because there are a lot of compatibility issues with,
God, yeah.
9 on 10 softwares would not work on Apple, and it's a pain. Really, it's a pain. Like, I've seen, like, the entire, like, 50% of the class have Mac, and they're all sitting idle that things are not working, or they have to do extra hard work to actually get things set up and everything, and by that time, things just rolls off for the week.
Yeah, so for sure. Yeah, I think with the Macs, at least I think you would be better off with like an Intel chip, which, you know, they were rolling out earlier. But with the new chip, the M1 and now the M2, there are a lot of compatibility issues. There are like efforts on like maybe popular like open source projects to have that compatibility, but still there's a long way to go. And so especially if you're doing like systems level courses with, you know, you need virtual machines to be running, or courses which have like old software, right, which aren't really like updated to like to run on like the latest M1 chip. So those, you know, these may not be compatible. And yeah, I till the last day of, you know, finishing my project, I had to just do some hacky stuff, which is not at all reliable. You know, anytime my work could be lost. And so yeah, I think that just added the stress to everything else which is already there. So yeah, please make sure that the software you need runs on the laptop which you buy.
Yeah, like at least you check the university's website on technology and see like what are the specifications they would need for your course. That's the best part to actually look up. And if it's okay with Mac, then you're welcome to bring it, or else I just don't want to explain it much, but that was really a pain. And I've seen people go through it. So it is really challenging to actually understand the things, then get it loaded, and then actually come back to the original work that you have to do. So that's something really not working at all in that stressful environment. Great. So I have one this or that question for you. Mm-hmm. So I give you two options. You choose one out of it my audience to know the answer for it. So either you tell us your GRE score or you tell us your GPA for your course. So either of it, you choose it and you tell us so that people know more about it, that what was the GRE score or GPA that you got.
Sure. So I think I might just go with my GPA. So I got 3.92, if I'm not wrong on the last decibel, out of 4 points. Tough ride all along, but you know,
that's amazing. Oh my God, that's amazing. After like such a stressful semester and a course, 3.92 is like bang on. And for everyone out there in the States, we just have a grading scale of 4.0 instead of 10.0 as compared to India. So, you know, as international students, we are required to maintain a GPA scale of 3.0. We cannot go lower than that, or else our F1 visa would get terminated, and the 3.92 is like real amazing. Like, are
Thanks
you
so
like
much.
the valedictorian in the graduation? Something of that sort.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I think it. Thank you so much for the wishes. Yeah, I think the courses and the assignments, definitely there are a lot of things to do. But when you have, if you have like good teaching assistants and professors who can really help you succeed in that course, that can be a great plus for you. So yeah, while choosing the courses as well, I think one thing to like look at is, you know, how good is the support system for that course, and you know, if you're stuck, other people help you out. So yeah, I'm glad to have gotten a good support through the year.
That's really required when you're out and really far away from home, family, and everything. It's really important to have that. So I guess that's really a lot of information for all of you to actually know about that course and know about that university. And if anyone is looking out to actually go and apply to Carnegie Mellon University, we have actually talked about a lot of things. If you're coming from India, you should actually listen to the entire you know, the discussion that we had, and I made sure that I covered every part of it. But if not, we would have Harini share her details, and you could actually directly connect to her and ask her more questions, more specific questions that I guess this 1 hour would not be able to fit in. But before we close off, Harini, any last minute advices, anything that you have inculcated in the last 1 year, and considering it's Women History Month, and how do you want to be, you know, how do you want to put up things with what you have gone through and what you're having it right now? If you want to give it out to somebody who is listening back in India and aspiring to, you know, become like you, and what do you wanted to just give out?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think always coming out of your comfort zone is, it's always going to be difficult, but I think the journey and the experiences are definitely very rewarding. Like, we may have ranted a lot during this podcast, but I think everyone should know that the confidence you get after going through this journey is something else. You know, and you'll be really proud of yourself for coming through this, taking out something which was not in your comfort zone, pushing through it, and finally getting it done. So yeah, like, there may be challenges along the way, but you know, don't get blocked by those. Like, I think the bigger picture is something we can aspire to see. So reach out to people. I think being part of communities has been a huge part of my journey. You know, being part of Women in Cybersecurity, WSIS, and Breaking Barriers for Women in Cybersecurity, BBWIC. These are two huge communities with amazing women like Saman. So, like I said, Saman was one of the first few people who I knew, and I was super inspired by. She was really very approachable, and when I was looking for resources on learning cybersecurity topics, and I was listening to her talks, and found that really inspiring. And being the very kind and sweet person she is, she was super approachable. And as someone starting out in the career, you know, her inputs were really valuable. So take advantage of your contacts. I think I would like to believe that there are more nice people around than not. So people are always willing to help out others. So, you know, leverage your network, reach out to people, and I'm sure each one of you will do great in your careers. So I'm really grateful for the amazing women in my life.
That's so sweet. That's so sweet. And I really wanted to resonate and echo this point as well, that, you know, it's just a matter of point that you come out and ask for help. And it's totally, totally fine to actually, you know, ask for help, discuss with people. And that has really helped me as well as a student. And I guess at your time as well, Harini, things really came out into place when you did connect with a lot of alumni or the cyber communities that you were part of. And that just really helps you out a lot, because you know, when you come down to the international borders as well, and you know people who you have connected, so you can rely on to them. So it's not just the family, but the friends you make that become family through connection. So I really wanted to stress on that point, like as a very recent student, it's really important for you to leverage LinkedIn and other resources as well, that you connect with people. And there are a lot of people, trust me, they're actually sitting out ready to help. And I would be really glad to put myself out that I'm ready. Harini on the other self as well is also ready to actually help with.
Definitely.
And you'll see, I'll put down her handles, like LinkedIn handles, and she'd be happy to reply and have a discussion with you if you're facing any of the challenges with your application or anything that you want help with. So we're all there. It's just a matter of how you actually approach to us. So I hope it was really great for you, Harini, to actually go back to the early days of your school life and how things actually went off. I know it's really emotional as well, because you have now graduated and it's been a next step in your career. But I'm really, really thankful for you to be part of the podcast, being the first guest. And I'm really, really happy that we are able to, you know, record this to know more about your life, your experiences at CMU. So really, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. This has been really nice. I think, I hope it was really helpful for the listeners, but I think for me, it has been very therapeutic talking to you for an hour today and revisiting the past 1 year. I think it's lovely chatting with you, Saman, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Great. So with that, we wrap up with our first episode. It was really glad to have Harini and know more about Carnegie Mellon, what course she took and how, and what were the challenges she faced, what were the good parts that she had here, and yes, job search, and in total, what was her experience. So if anyone who would or is planning to actually come down and take up the same course, please watch this video. You'll be knowing a lot of things that she has gone through, and you could learn more from it, or else you could know more about things specific by connecting with her. You'll find all the handles down. And great, everyone, celebrate Women's History Month. And you know, I'd be really glad if people connect with me, DM with me, and let me know more about what you want to see. So signing off today from Off the Record. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Off the Record, a student abroad podcast with Saman Fatima, part of the ITSB Magazine podcast network. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then add this show to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to the ITSB Magazine YouTube channel, and share the ITSB Magazine podcast network with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to connect your brand to our conversations and our audience, visit itsbmagazine.com to learn how to sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.